Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Gottfried's Straight No Chaser. What a wonderful, wonderful episode we have tonight. I have two wonderful gentlemen that I will be introducing to you in a little bit. I've known them for a very long time. They both made great impacts on my life very early in my life, and we'll talk about that. But first, I want to do the little housekeeping that I always do. I want you to remember that you're on blogtalkradio.com/S as in Steve, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, the number 2. And if you do that, if you go to that site, you can hear all of the previous episodes. We are now past 20 episodes this week. And then you should know that if you want to call in, if the audience wants to call in and ask any questions, you need to call 516-453-6063. And thank you so much, everyone, for listening to Lenny Gottfried's Straight No Chaser week after week after week from all the places that you are. And I know that we're in some areas experiencing a little storm here and there, so you might hear a little interruption, but we're going to keep on plowing through this evening. This evening is dedicated to the artist that I know personally who really masters in the artistry of production, and specifically stage management and above and beyond. Both of them have stage managed, then went on to directing and becoming ministers of music and all of these things. These gentlemen have impressed me and inspired me in two very important times in my life. My guests tonight are Kenneth Hansen and Clinton Turner Davis. Now, let me just say before they say hello to you, that Kenneth Hansen, born in Harlem, has been the stage manager to more than, I'd say, 9 Broadway shows. He is a wonderful production manager for the Boys Choir of Harlem. He worked with Michael Peters. He's worked with Felicia Rashad. He's worked with Patti LaBelle. And it goes on and on and on. And we won't talk about the shows. We will talk a little bit about some of the shows, Jelly's Last Chance, Sophisticated Ladies, Bubbling Brown Sugar, The Wiz, all of that. And then we have Clinton Turner Davis. Well, Clinton Turner Davis being a graduate of Howard University. Now, Kenneth was a graduate of Boston College. And Clinton started off as a stage manager and worked also with Felicia Rashad and Noel Porter, who was a family friend of my husband and who attended my wedding. God bless wonderful Noel Porter, who was a magnificent musician. And then went on to work on tributes with Diana Ross to stage manage shows like Fences, Home, and My Beloved Yubi, and The First Breeze of Summer, on down. I mean, he's just more and more and more. I will spend a half an hour going over these men's credits, and so I'm going to stop right now and make them both say hello. And welcome, please, first, Kenneth Hansen. How are you?
Hello. Hello, Lenny. How are you? I'm good.
I'm just fine, and thank you, and welcome. And Clinton Turner Davis, how are you?
I'm fine, Lenny. Good evening, and hello, Kenneth.
Hello, Clinton. How are you?
I'm doing well, and hello all the listeners out there in Radio Land.
Thank you very much. The numbers are beginning to pile up, and I'm hoping in a little while that they have an opportunity to ask you all some questions about some of the things that we're going to talk about tonight. Now, people have to understand that both of these men I've known really most of my life. Ken Kenneth Hansen and I went to the same high school, George Washington High School. And Kenneth Hansen, yes, was responsible for me getting on the stage for the first time. Ken, do you remember some of that?
Well, I remember you asking me, because I was studying the piano at that time. That's when I was learning to play the piano myself. I was,
learning
to play.
You were fabulous at that time. You were already fabulous.
Yeah.
What did you mean, learning to play? Oh,
well, I was at the Harlem School of the Arts. That's where I began studying music. My first love is always music, and I was one of the first students of the Harlem School of the Arts under Dorothy Maynard. The Harlem School is still there on St. Nicholas Avenue. I grew up around the corner. And so I was playing when I was in high school. In fact, I played it at the at graduation. I played a big piano solo at the graduation for George Washington. But it was a talent show. I remember playing Where Am I Going for You from Sweet Charity.
Yes.
And I remember your deep voice. Where am I going? I was like, okay. Very, very Marlena Dietrich, the black Marlena Dietrich. I said, okay. I'm used to soprano. Everything's soprano. So I was like, okay, this is another sound. Okay.
Yes.
But it was a great time. You remember
more than
I do about it. So, you know, it was wonderful.
Well, thank you. I remember also being introduced to the song Gran Caramera at that point in time, and that is what started that audience. And now I have to fast forward through my going off to Hampton University for a minute and then coming back to Hunter, finishing up, and then being fortunate enough to do a series of shows that landed me in the showcase of Shuffle Along that turned into Yubi. And as Yubi was being formulated, that's when I met the wonderful Clinton Turner Davis. Hello, Clinton. Do you remember that whole beginning?
I certainly do. I have many, many fond memories of that entire experience.
Yes. We were at the American, what is it? It was American, the dance place, dance, ballet.
ABT, American Ballet School, Ballet Theater School, up on Broadway.
Exactly. That's where we rehearsed. And then, of course, we went to Philadelphia. And lo and behold, who knew what was going to happen? You know, I mean, we were going to Philadelphia to see if anything was going to work. And we broke the records. We stayed past the time that they had initially asked us to be there. And we broke all the records there. And then eventually opened up on Broadway in September. Now, gentlemen, I just wanted people to know that on certain points in my life, because of certain times in my life, you all were so very, very important. But now I want to go back and I want to explore your lives. Both of you are so very steeped into the arts. I'm going to start with Kenny this time, and then I'm going to switch up with you, Clinton. But Kenneth, I want you to start telling me, because you talked a little bit about being the Harlem School of the Arts. When did your interest in the arts start? Because when I met you, you talking about you starting to learn how to play, you were playing beautifully. And so that was high school. You were, I think, still a junior. I was a sophomore, I think. So sophomore, freshman.
Yeah.
So, talk to me about when it all first started for you.
Well, I grew up in Harlem, up what is now called Harlem, Hamilton Heights. Back then, we just thought it was Harlem. So now it's called Hamilton Heights because of the Hamilton House, and I grew up right around the corner from there. But I was right far, and I grew up in Compton Avenue Baptist Church on 145th Street in Compton Avenue, and they had a very rich musical program, and that's where I started getting in love with playing the piano. So I took lessons at the Harlem School of the Arts when it had first opened, in the 1960s, and so that was my first love, was music, and always was music. So by the time I met you, my mother was not a musician, my father was a musician, but I had an aunt that had a piano, and I taught myself how to play the piano. I had a book called How to Play the Piano, and I was very smart. Unfortunately, what happened in my life is that I was an academic. I was very good in school, and they don't push you to go into the arts. They push you to go into academics. So that's why I went to Boston University and ended up with a degree in mathematics. I had no interest in math whatsoever, and it wasn't until I no interest whatsoever. My grades can reflect that, because I kept saying, well, why my grades? Because I didn't care anything about it. I was just good at it. I wanted to be in around music, you know, and go ahead.
No, no, just keep that in. But how old were you when you took up that book? How old were you?
Oh, I was probably about 15 or 14, maybe like
oh
that,
gosh.
15 or 14, because I was in the choirs at Covenant Baptist Church, and
mm-hmm.
they started me playing in church, and I'm
mm-hmm.
still there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the choir now. I'm one of the baritone soloists in the choir now as a senior.
Now, you were going to say, and someone did something. It was a female. What were you? I interrupted your thought. Do you remember?
Oh, I was saying that Dorothy Maynard ran. Oh, one of the teachers, my choir director was my mentor at Covenant Avenue Baptist Church. She took me under her wing and
mm-hmm.
made me her assistant and taught me how to direct and taught me how to play the organ. And I eventually succeeded her when she retired. I eventually took over the choir, directed the choir at Covenant Baptist Church at the same time that I was starting on Broadway. Yes.
Well, so that gets me to from you being an adolescent to after college. So now I'm going to go to Clinton. Clinton, you heard all of that. Now, when did you first start? Because this is so important for people to understand how the arts really was infused into your body of work and to your lives early on. So, Clinton?
Okay. My mother was really the impetus and the engine in terms of my career in the arts. She was the community organizer for all the kids. She's an educator, a teacher. She taught elementary school. And she was the mother in the neighborhood who would gather all the kids in the summertime and be sure that every kid 5 years old and up learned how to swim. She was the one who would organize field trips to the D.C. To the youth orchestra programs, the youth programs that were a part of the schedule of the National Symphony Orchestra in Washington, D.C., where I grew up. And so that started a habit, really, of going to concerts, primarily classical concerts. And then at about 10 years old, I started taking piano lessons. One of my cousins, Norma Williams, was my piano teacher, and I took piano lessons in exchange for babysitting. She had four sons, and the entire family was fantastically musically inclined. It's the only house I knew of. I think she had seven pianos in the house, two concert grands, and about four or five uprights, almost a piano in every room on the first floor, and I think there were two down, maybe three down in the basement. And so my love of music, of piano particularly, was triggered there. And for a while I thought I wanted to be a concert pianist. I was really studying very focused study, because it was enjoyable. She made it enjoyable. And also during this time, by the time I'd gotten into high school, I was fortunate enough to be in situations where there were other music mentors. I was one of the charter members, excuse me, of the D.C. Youth Chorale under the directorship of Francis Hughes, and a number of well-known artist came out of the D.C. Youth Chorale, opera singer Carmen Balthrop, Veronica Redd, Cynthia Clary, another brilliantly beautiful soprano, and also going to McKinley High School, the director of the music teacher there was Beatrice Gilks, who was a brilliant, brilliant music educator and a fantastic choral director, and I was in the choir there and also would accompany the choir with some pieces, playing the piano. And it was at a time when another person who was in that choir at that point, he and I would switch off. And, of course, he was so much better than I was Richard Smallwood.
And so we were
in high school together, along with a number of other people who had gone on, like John Buchanan, who went to Notre Dame, and he was one of the first people to really change the sound of halftime shows that the bands would play with the orchestrations and all that he did for the Notre Dame marching band. And so that was the beginning through my mom. She would take us to dance concerts. And then being in Washington, D.C., and having all of the museums and the programs that were always happening in the museums and art galleries, I was always exposed to the arts, and everything was always free.
Yeah.
And because we were going so there so often, all the guards in the museums and in the galleries and all, they knew us. So it was like one big family, one big village of the arts.
Now, did you go to the art school? Is it the Duke Ellington School? Did you go to?
No, this was long before Duke Ellington. My association with Duke Ellington. I was at Howard University in the summer, and in the summer of 70s. Peggy Cooper, Kay Fritz, and Mike Malone had the idea to create workshops for careers in the arts. And that was when I was in school there, Debbie Allen was in school, and we were all taking classes along with a number of other people, Clyde Barrett, Kenneth Holliday, David Cameron, Brenny Gibson. And that was the core group of people that was the core group that went on to create the workshops for careers in the arts. It was the foundation for the Duke Ellington School
was
founded in 1970-71, I believe, or maybe it was 72, and I don't have the exact date.
Okay.
But that was my early association with Duke Ellington.
Well, now, Kenneth, I'm going to run back to you. So what elementary and middle school did you go to? Because you didn't go to having all of that musical talent, again, both of you having that. But you were in Manhattan. Clinton is in D.C. You didn't go to music and art. You didn't.
That's a great disappointment in my life. I wanted to go to music and art so bad because I lived right a few blocks from there. I grew up on 143rd Street, and music and art was on 135th Street. And I went to junior high school 43, which is on Amsterdam Avenue.
Joanne went there.
Harry Belafonte went there, and I grew up on the same block as Arthur Mitchell. But Mr. Mitchell was a generation above me on 143rd Street between Amsterdam and Hamilton Place and Broadway. And Mr. Mitchell and I went to the same elementary school and PS 186, and Harry Belafonte went there between Amsterdam and Broadway. On 145th Street, there's a elementary school that's now apartments. I went there. So everything was right. Cobb Baptist Church was right there. And 43, and unfortunately, I didn't get into music and art because I went in and I was really just learning the piano then. And I went in and made the mistake of telling them in the audition that I could play the viola because I played the viola. I was learning to play the viola in the school orchestra. They went and got a viola. Brought it in and said, here, play it. I said, oh, my God. And, of course, I didn't get in the school. And I was so heartbroken. But I still had a life of music.
Oh, well, yes.
But that was a big disappointment for me that I didn't get in music at all. I really wanted that very badly. But then I wouldn't have met you at George Washington.
That's true. We would not. Now, Clinton, so you're in D.C., Clinton. So
yes.
How did you get from D.C. Now, Kenny and I are already, we're New Yorkers, so we're born and raised in New York, so we have the natural affinity to be here in the city. How did you get from after Howard University, what drove you here to the city?
Well, it was the summer of, I think it was 71. I had just graduated, and I was in a show in Washington, D.C., that was conceived and directed by Glenda Dickerson, and entitled Jesus Christ, Lord Today. And it was her black interpretation of Jesus Christ Superstar. The show was a tremendous success in D.C. I was playing the role of Judas. And we had a two-week hiatus because we were moving into a larger theater. And so I decided to come to New York to visit my cousin, Horacina Taylor, who was a stage managing director in her own right. She was stage managing then. And also to visit Felicia Rashad, who was then Felicia Allen.
And
she had just graduated the year before from Howard University. And so I met Felicia for lunch. We had lunch at the Howard Johnson's on 8th Avenue and 50th Street, at Clark Center. And she told me that since I was there, I should at least go down to the Public Theater and audition for a show. And I told her I was going back to do the show in D.C. She said, well, you could still audition. And so I did. I made an appointment to audition and thought nothing of it. And I had applied to grad school, and I had wanted to go to grad school to Hunter College. They had started a new program where selected students could go and immediately, I had a BFA, and I graduated with honors, but you could go directly into a PhD program. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't heard from them whether I had been accepted or not. So I took my transcripts and all up to the college.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me they'd get back to me. And then I received a call a couple of days later from my mother. She said I needed to come home quickly because she didn't understand. And I needed to explain to her that I was going to be start rehearsals in a show on Tuesday. The following Tuesday, and on that Monday, I was going to start grad school, working on a degree in dramatic literature and criticism. So I went back home. We had a long talk. My mother loaned me $50. I packed all my bags in all my clothes in a duffel bag, and came up and moved to New York City. I started grad school. And on that Monday, and I started acting in the show on that Tuesday. The show at the Public Theater was called Slaughterhouse Play. It's where I first met Danny DeVito, of all people, who was in the production. And that started my journey in theater here in New York. And then from then on, I went to that show closed. I had gotten bored thoroughly with grad school because it was a lot of repetition of the exceptional education I had in the drama and dance department at Howard University. Mm-hmm. And my advisor then was Harold Klerman, and we had a long discussion, and he said what I needed to do was to not think about grad school now, to just get out and start working. Broke my heart, but I did, and I finally landed a job at the Negro Ensemble Company through my cousin, through Horacina, and that's where I first started. I started there as a production supervisor on the play Sty of the Blind Pig that Shawnee O'Perry directed, and it starred Moses Gunn. The first professionals I met in the theater in New York were African-Americans, were Moses Gunn, Francis Foster, Clarice Taylor, and Adolph Caesar. And that began my career as a stage, ultimately as a production assistant, and I moved through the company up to stage manager. And after, 17 years with the company, by the time I had finished and moved on in 1986, I had been assistant to the director, the artistic director, the production supervisor, production stage manager, literary manager, casting director. I taught the playwriting workshop, and I also taught the movement for actors workshop and dance classes.
I missed you there. You know, I took there. Chris Kaiser was my teacher there when I was studying.
Yes.
Yes, I was studying with Chris because Lloyd made us go up and audition, two of us from my class. And so I was in for a year. So I missed you. I probably knew you, saw you, but I didn't know you were you.
Yes, I fondly remember Chris Kaiser. Good man.
Yes, Chris Kaiser, yes. Now, Ken. All right, so that Dive of a Blind Pig was 1971. So, Ken, now when did you, you've come from Boston University. What did you do?
Yes.
Because you got your degree now in mathematics. Well, what did you do?
Oh, well, I became a school teacher, a math teacher.
Whoa, really?
About a block. Oh, yeah. I taught algebra, and I taught, I was very smart when I was young. I taught algebra a block from where I live right now, where I live on 128th Street, and I came back to the same building years later when I was with the Boys Choir of Harlem. But when I graduated from Boston University, it was IS-201, a very controversial school that helped decentralize the schools of New York City. And I was a math teacher. But then I met all these Broadway people. And I just was like, wait a minute. You know, these people, that's when I met Michael Peters and Lester Wilson and my best friend Reggie Jackson. You know, he had been in Hello, Dolly. With Pearl Bailey, and that was the first musical that I ever saw was Hello, Dolly with Pearl Bailey and Cab Calloway.
Really?
I met him, and I traveled in a crowd of artistic people. They had all gone to music and art and all these different places, and I just was a piano player, and they were friends of mine, and I was hanging around with them. And when I graduated from college, I went to Los Angeles, and they were doing a show. Lester Wilson is the person that was one of my mentors, and Michael Peters was his assistant. And my best friend, Reggie Jackson, Winston DeWitt Hemsley, a lot of these people have passed away, Gary Chapman. And I was like a production assistant just hanging around in L.A. in 1973. And I was a school teacher. I had just graduated from college, and I was going to teach school. And so Lester Wilson, I said, well, Lester, I want to do what you all are doing. Because, you know, nobody was telling you to be in show business. It's like, my God. And so Lester was the one that told me, you know, you probably would make a good stage manager. I didn't even know what a stage manager was. Much less what that I would make. I was a school teacher and a piano player. But Lester said, and amongst them, because they were very wild, they wore a lot of wigs and heels, and they were very like Billy Porter's dressed now. They did that back in the 70s. And I was very straight-laced from Boston University. I looked like that real straight-laced girl on the Munsters. You know, the one that... you know, the one I was like that. Oh, yeah, they were so far out. I'm talking about Michael Peters now. He was a dancer this long before he became a choreographer. They were so freaked out that they wouldn't even let them in Disneyland. Okay, I went out to L.A. and I wanted to go to Disneyland, but they were so – but Lester was the one that told me that I should be a stage manager. So I came back to New York, and I was still a school teacher, and I said, well, I got to figure out what is a stage manager, because I know this math teacher thing is not working for me. So I left for about 2.5 years. As a math teacher, and I quit, and I started with Miss Lenoir at Amos.
Were you at Amos?
At Amos, the first thing I ever did with that Amos with Miss Lenoir, a show called God Song, I guess it was called. That would be 1976 or 75.
Then
I left there, and I went to Vinette Carroll, and I trained down there with Vinette at the Urban Arts Corps. And I still didn't really know what a stage manager did. I was trying to figure out my best, you know, but told me. I was a school teacher. And then my best friend Reggie was doing Bubble and Brown Sugar on Broadway. He was a swing dancer, and he introduced me to the head stage manager. And I talked my way into a job with no experience. I was
What grade did you say? I was very audacious.
I had a lot of gall and a lot of audaciousness at 25 years old.
They called me on my
I met this man, his name was Michael Maurer. He was the head stage manager. He had done Hair and all these other shows, and they were looking for somebody black, because this was the black thing, and they needed an extra stage manager, because the stage manager they had he was understanding the white. They only had white stage managers, you know. So, but they needed somebody black because all these black people were in there. And he had just met me per chance because my best friend Reggie introduced me to him and said he wants to be a stage manager. And I had a resume that I had written up that didn't even have real credits on it that I had even done. Okay, Lester told me I could put his show on there. Michael Peters told me I could put his show on there. But I did have Rosetta Lenoir and Bennett Carroll, and I had graduated from Boston University, and I looked correct, and I sounded correct, and this man Michael Maurer liked me. And I went down and was interviewed on my birthday in 1976, and I started on Broadway the next night.
Oh,
whoa.
And
wow.
That was 5 months after I quit teaching.
Wow, Ken.
That's fantastic.
And I kicked the door open and I never let it close back. Okay.
I know.
Now you couldn't do that now because of the internet and social media, and everybody's all up in everybody's business. But they didn't know me from left to right, and this was a long time ago before computers. And you could get rid of this. And I was audacious. I had a lot of audacity.
Oh my God.
You have to have audacity in this
now,
life. You know.
And you still have audacious. But wait a minute. I have to stop you now. What grade did you teach math? You said algebra. What was that, ninth grade?
I taught in junior high school, but they had an advanced class, you know, towards the end of the years, and I was basic algebra, you know, like A plus B, you know, X plus Y, nothing really complex. But I was teaching, you know, trigonometry and, you know, that sort of I was smart back then. I played Bach. I studied piano. That was my dream, to be a pianist just like him. But I knew I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think I was talented enough. When I got to Boston University, those kids were going up and down that keyboard like crazy. I said, no, I can't do quite that. So I kind of talked myself out of that. But I wound up with a life of music. I only did musical shows, you know.
But
how I started.
The two of you, it's amazing. Now, this is amazing. But, you know, I thought I knew some of the things that were parallel about you, but I'm learning as we speak now some of the things. Now, so you started off, I got Clinton starting off there and you starting off. So fast forward, you both started careers. Clinton, you went on to do more plays than musicals. Am I right?
Yes, I did. And that was primarily because I spent those so many years at the Negro Ensemble Company that Douglas Turner Ward, the artistic director, occasionally programmed musicals, but for the most part, they were straight plays.
Mm-hmm. So
but the musicals,
me,
I, yes?
No. Go ahead. Go, please.
But I did do a couple of musicals there. Well, throughout my career, I did The Great McDaddy, Tremonisha, as you mentioned. And then I did some other, what was another one? Parts of the music I did say The Great McDaddy. But then I went on to do other festivals and shows like early on, the Soul at the Center, the big 1 month festival of music and R&B groups that played at Lincoln Center that Ellis Hayslip directed. And I did also.
But you did
other large festivals. I'm sorry.
You did Tremonisha.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that was one of those instances, just like Kenneth. I was called the show all black cast was coming into New York City, and they wanted an African American stage manager, and this was the Houston Grand Opera Company production. It was playing at the Kennedy Center, and so I went down and joined the company there and brought the show into New York, and it ran at the Palace Theater. So I did that. That was around the same time that.
Tell people about what Tremonisha is. Who was the composer of Tremonisha? Because a lot of people don't realize that that was an opera composed by a black man. And just say a little bit about it.
Tremonisha is an amazing work, an opera, a folk opera. That was composed, a ragtime folk opera that was composed by Scott Joplin.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's called a ragtime opera. It was choreographed by Louis Johnson. In fact, Joplin was posthumously awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Music what was that year? 76 for that production.
Mm-hmm.
And
if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Kathleen Battle the understudy?
Yes, she was. Kathleen Battle was the understudy. Carmen Balthrop played Tremonisha. Betty Allen played Monisha.
Yes.
Ken Hicks, a brilliant tenor, and Curtis Ryan, another tenor, were in it. And there were all of these amazing, amazing dancers, primarily from Houston, but Louis Johnson, with the fantastic choreography, had some of the best and most fantastic dances between Tremonisha, which was running at the Palace, and The Wiz, which was running, and it moved around to several theaters. Most of the fantastic black dancers in New York City were employed in those two productions.
Yeah, they were.
So it was a really fantastic time working on those
really
two shows.
Really wonderful. Now, I'm going to tell you now, you all won't believe it, but we only have about 20 minutes left. See, I tell you how fast it goes. Okay. So I want to get to, Ken, you already told me one kind of downtime that happened in your life, a disappointment. I want you to think, Ken, one of the most amazing times that a memory that you have. Now, Clinton, that gives you a cheat. You get a chance to think a little bit more about both.
Okay.
Of the lowest ebb and the highest point. So, Ken, what was the most amazing memory you think you have?
Well, there's so many. I did so many, many exciting things.
Yeah.
But nothing ever compares to The Wiz. I had a long, long experience with The Wiz, and I eventually wound up I was an understudy, assistant stage manager, and an understudy for The Wiz on Broadway, and because I was understudy by friend Howard Porter, but as Uncle Henry, the Lord High Underling, and the Gatekeeper, and I went on for a week. And mind you, they never auditioned me. When I got hired, it was like, oh, you're the assistant stage manager and you're the understudy for this. I said, okay. Never auditioned me, never. They just, you can do it. Okay, and I went on. And that was actually the most exciting thing for me, because when The Wiz opened, I was just beside myself. It made me want to be. I was still a school teacher, and it made me want to be really in show business and the whole experience of that. And then also working on the movie. I mean, when I was doing Bubbling Brown Sugar, which was my first show on Broadway, at the same time the movie was being made, you know, down at the World Trade Center, and everybody in New York wanted to be somewhere in the movie, and I always, I was always the person that was interested in performing as much as being behind the scenes is probably, you know, and I was down there, and I was an extra, and I can see myself, but you have to pause it, and I have to be there with you to point me out, but that was it. The Wiz was the high point, you know, for me. And, you want me to talk about the lowest point?
You touched a little bit on your disappointment for music and art. Was there something else?
That was disappointing, but, I mean, there are always shows that you want to get. And, you know, there was very hard to get a white show back then, and I almost got The Phantom of the Opera, and I was so thrilled. They had called me in. When they first called me, I thought they were saying the Santa Fe Opera, but it was The Phantom of the Opera. They wanted to interview me. And I was like, I can't say Santa Fe Opera.
Only
how do you get my resume? They said, no, this is The Phantom of the Opera. Cameron McIntosh's office calling. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to be the first black person that's going to work for Cameron McIntosh. But I didn't get it. And that was a big disappointment. Other than that, the great disappointment of having lost all my friends to AIDS that I started out with. That was the greatest disappointment of my life. And my best friends that I started out in show business with, Michael Peters and Reggie Jackson and Lester Wilson, that I lost all those people that I've just mentioned in the forefront. And so that was like the lowest point for me, when, because they all, one after the other, it was a period of 5 years, and I sort of devastated, you know, definitely. But, you know, I survived.
Yeah.
Still here.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, relationships are built on memories, and our friends and our associates have our memories. You know, I do agree with you. I have many, many memories of people that I've lost now, and you always pictured yourself, you know, sitting down, being older, laughing about all the antics that you did together, and telling their grandchildren, all of them, telling the grandchildren, don't believe those lies that they were good. They weren't good.
Absolutely.
They were terrible.
At least there's YouTube and social media that keeps people alive now. You
yes,
know, years
does.
Ago, they didn't.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. You're right. Now, Clinton, where are
you?
Yes. All right. Tell me what your thoughts are about the highest point, one of your lowest points, and how the arts, I mean, the arts were all through your lives. I'm just so fascinated by this. Go ahead, Clinton. I'm ready.
Okay. I think the highest point in my entire professional career was in 1983-84. I had been at the New Ensemble Company for a number of years, and I was wearing so many hats, and I was really overworked. A Soldier's Play was running. There were three shows running in New York. A Soldier's Play was on the road. Two shows were in rehearsal, and one show was in development, and I was supervising all of them, and I was exhausted. And I had asked for a raise, and they told me that they couldn't get a raise. I couldn't receive a raise. There was no money in the budget. And I said, okay, well, I quit. And I did. I didn't know what I was going to do next. And, in fact, I quit, and I'm going to take an executive lunch right now. And I walked out of the offices. They were in the Equity Building. And by the time I got down to the corner of 46th and 7th Avenue, I ran into Veronica Claypool, who was a producer, a general manager. And we screamed and hollered in the middle of the street. I hadn't seen her in several months. And we got to the corner, and she asked me what I was doing. I just told her I quit my job. I didn't know what I was going to do next. And she said, what, really? I may have something for you. I said, okay, whatever, I'm interested. And she said, oh, can you let me get to the office, and I'll call you. She did. And what she called me about, she arranged me to have an interview to go on the road and become the production stage manager of Lena Horne, The Lady and Her Music.
Oh.
So that was, I walked out of I quit the job on Tuesday, had the interview on Wednesday, met Lena Horne on Thursday, got the job on Friday, started work with Lena Horne the following Monday.
Oh.
And that was, I look at that year, it was a year of limousine, champagne limousines and Lear jets. And it was one of the most amazing times to really see a master craftsman at work.
Yes.
And to this wonderful, so talented and historic, this icon for me, and to just spend such wonderful time with her, quiet times, and her telling us stories about her life and all. And the show ended, we went to London, and we played several, a month and a half or maybe longer in London. And when the show closed, I decided to stay in London for a while, and I lived there for several months. And on the way back home, flying back to New York, I said, okay, what do I want to do next? Any other stage managing gig or production supervision gig that I get is going to be downhill from here, what to do. And so when I got off the plane, I started telling everybody I was a director. And for those first many, several months, I had no work. Thank God I had savings. But slowly I started building a name, doing these small showcase and productions for no money, and started building a career as a director. And, mm-hmm. and also during this time, only stage managing big events for about 10 years, like the Wolves of Africa Festival at Lincoln Center. What I think that was in like the 80s, 86. In 96, the production supervisor for all of the dance programs for the Cultural Olympiad in Atlanta. And I was doing those kinds of things. But then in late 95, 96, there was a period after the Olympics that I was out of work for about 2 months. Now, and mind you, I have been extremely fortunate that for most of my career in New York since 71, there have been maybe only a periods of maybe 4 months in succession where I have been, no, not even that, 3 months in succession where I've not been employed, where
mm-hmm.
I have collecting on that. And so when I was into the second month here, I freaked because I was not used to it. The opportunity came to teach at a school in Colorado, and they offered me a contract that I couldn't refuse, where I was committed to working 14 weeks a year, but they were paying me for the entire 52, and so I gladly took it. And that opened doors. I stayed there 17 years, and it opened doors for me to work in Asia, and established my connection with a puppet theater company there, and we did several other collaborations over the years. And so it just helped me broaden my international kind of presence in the theater. And so that has been basically it. And I am still thankful that I always kind of look at the Lena Horne show and Lena Horne herself as the impetus for that, to make mm-hmm. me move, to nudge me to move from stage managing into the other things that I had always trained and wanted to do, which was directing.
Yes.
And developing scripts.
Both of you have had your lives changed into from stage managing. You into directing and puppetry. Isn't puppetry something
yes.
that
mm-hmm.
yes. And Ken, you went from stage management into really becoming almost like minister of music, really
yes.
become a musical
yeah,
director.
I, and then also a concert singer. I became a concert singer late when I
mm-hmm.
finished doing my last show, which was the original Smokey Joe's Cafe, and
mm-hmm.
I was there for 5 years. I was one of mm-hmm. the help create that. That was the last show I did, and when I left there, I felt sort of similar to, I didn't feel like I needed to do any more stage managing. I was the production stage manager of this long-running hit show, and I sort of had lost the desire to do that anymore. I don't even know if I ever really had the desire to do it, but I was able to do it. And I turned to singing. And my teacher at Calm Beverly Baptist Church had an international singing group called the Harlem Jubilee Singers, and he asked me to go out as his soloist. And I ended up singing on concert stages in 10 different countries all over South America. And I mean like the opera houses, not little venues. These were the main venues. And I did 3 countries in Europe, 10 countries all together, all over South America. And I was in concert 3 times with tuxedo and bow tie. Really, they even got reviewed as a singer. I was reviewed in 3 different languages, in Portuguese and Rio de Janeiro, and as well as in Spanish. So I kind of redefined myself as a singer. I didn't have the confidence when I was young, but my teacher brought it out in me. And I have all kind of things on YouTube and all over the place singing, you know. So
you know, Kenneth, you said something that for me resonates very, very clearly, and that mm-hmm. is when stage managing and production supervision tells you, okay,
mm-hmm.
time to move
yeah.
on
yeah.
to something else.
Yeah.
And it's so clear when you hear
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
When you
Absolutely.
Realize
yeah.
that.
Yes. Well, you know, reinvention is a part of what we do all the time. And some people will do what they started off and they will continue to do that. And for there those of us who start off in one position and have an evolution all the way through life. And the love of it. I mean, you know, my love for stage management, I started off as a stage manager for Lloyd Richards Rose Tattoo at Hunter College. That was my first love. I was a student and there were no roles in Rose Tattoo except for there was he created something for me to do as an understudy. But he said, you know, well, learn stage management. I fell in love with stage management. But, of course, Lloyd pushed me. Then, you know, you get pushed. Sometimes you get pushed. Sometimes stage manager kind of pushes you out. But it's a love, and you never lose that love. I have a love for stage management that's unbelievable. Now, gentlemen, these people, if there's anyone who wants to ask a question, now we have less than 10 minutes left. Now is the time because I want Clinton. Clinton, you told me your high point, but you didn't tell me the lowest point. So I have just a little time for you to say that, and then we're at the end of this now.
That lowest point was being out of work for that 2 to 3 months before I started teaching.
Okay. All right. Well, I do remember. Now I'm asking everyone here comes a question already. I knew. All right. So I'm going to now, I don't know who the question is for. It could be for both of you, but I'm going to now allow this caller to come in. Hello and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. Please, your name and where you're from, please.
Hi, this is Fudgy from New York City. I know very good friends with both of you, with Kenny and, of course, you,
yes.
Lenny. But I've been listening to this fascinating conversation, and I said to myself, wow, they've answered all of my questions. So my question to both of you is, I'm always thinking about the future, and I'm always thinking about the young people of today. How would you inspire young people, or what advice would you give young people who are entering show business today, either as directors or musicians or actors? What are some of the things that you think they should know and they should be ready for when entering the business?
I will say
this.
I'm going to let Kenny, because this is Fudge from high school, Ken.
Yes,
so,
hi.
I know who he is. I know who
yes,
he is.
So I'm going to let Kenny answer. Now, Clinton, you think, and you're going to end this. Okay, go, Ken.
Well, like I said, the business has changed quite a lot, so I don't even feel like I'm really prepared to say what someone should do today. You know, it's been such a long time. Things have really, really changed. But all I can say is have a courage.
Wait a minute. Hold on for 1 second. Hold on for a second. I think we had a little interference. Say that again.
Yeah. Have enough courage and audacity to go after what you are passionate about. That's what I said. Don't settle to do something or make a living if you're not passionate about it. That's the joy of life. It's to pursue that for which you are passionate about.
All right, agreed. All right, Clinton?
Actually, I had just written down the same thing. Be passionate about your work. It is so important, so that even when the times are hard, if you are enjoying what you're doing, it doesn't matter. The weight is lighter that you must carry to get through it. And I would also, particularly that the business is changing so rapidly, is develop more than one skill set.
Yeah.
And back in the day when I remember the standard phrase then was to be, you worked most consistently if you were a triple threat, if you could act, dance, and sing.
Right.
Now I'm in that place now where I'm looking for quadruple or quintuple threats. Act, dance, sing, play a musical instrument. Mm-hmm. As well as some other skill, whether it be puppetry, whether it, I don't know, whatever it may be. But you need to have more tools in your toolkit than, oh, I'm an actor, oh, I'm a rapper, oh, I'm a this, oh, I'm a that. Because you never know where that next job may come from. Someone may see you performing as a singer and say, like as Kenny said, and then realize, oh, you stage manage too? Oh, you can act too? You can, so you could be the understudy as well as the stage manager.
Yes.
It is, you know, I look at it from the perspective of one of the first jobs that I had when I came to New York. I was the house manager at the Orpheum Theater when the Me Nobody Knows was playing there. And okay. Giancarlo Esposito was an understudy in the production.
Yeah.
And one night, and we would sit on the steps going up to the balcony with Giancarlo and his mother and talk. She was in the original company of Porgy and Bess when it toured Europe with Maya Angelou and all. But she would tell me all those stories. But one night, one performance, Giancarlo went on an emergency, and it happened to be the performance that the producer came to see the show. They immediately replaced the person he was studying with Giancarlo, and the show went on and reopened after the actor strike and opened on Broadway. He was ready,
yes,
as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting in the wings, and that has always been my kind of mantra. Always remember there is someone else waiting mm-hmm. in the wings. Be the
what?
Best mm-hmm. that you can be at what you're doing. And I think the bottom line, with all the passion about your work, having as many different skills developed as you can, is your professional honesty. That is essential. The mm-hmm. only thing you really have in this business is your reputation and your good word.
I agree.
Once you lose that, you have lost everything. You might as well go and be a librarian.
I agree. I think the level of integrity is very important. And I believe what we're looking for now is a hyphenated individual. You know,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it's all the hyphenation. I'm an actor, I'm a singer, I'm a dancer, I'm an author, I'm a director, I'm a producer, I'm a, you know, whatever it is,
yeah.
It's all hyphenated. It used to be that, yeah, the triple threat really was the one that everybody got to, but the productions have changed now. And
yes, but the important thing, yeah. Lenny, the important thing is with that hyphenated name or that those hyphenated skills, you have to be good at it.
Oh yes,
I think Kenneth and I have both encountered people who come into the audition with a hyphenated
mm-hmm.
moment, and it's like, okay, yes, you can act, but we need to get you a bucket so you can carry this tune.
I know. All right. Now that with that. I am now going to say that I'm going to have to take it in to this particular time. We're going to go off and do the after show afterthoughts. So we're going to take a break for about 5 minutes after I end this. Let these gentlemen get a swig of water, and we're going to go and do the afterthoughts show. The two of you have been absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much, Debbie, for calling in. You're absolutely wonderful and always so supportive every time. Thank you. And now I have 90 seconds to say that next week we will have the ladies talk about stage management, and that will be Gwen Gilliam and Fahmee Sarah Heggy, and they will have their stories, and I hope you two gentlemen will tune in to hear what that's going to be about. But in 1 minute, the show will stop. I will see you all on the other side. If you have any difficulties, just give me a little text, and I'll see you in again. Thank you, gentlemen, so much.
Thank you.
Welcome, Lenny.
Thank you.
Thank you. You all have all been right. absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much. Thank you again.
All
for
right.
Lenny, and Lenny got
all
you.
Right.
Straight from Chaser. Right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight.